Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. The first article is The Northbrook Layout, a three-rail tribute to the Pennsylvania Railroad. Article by Norm Charbonneau, photos by Craig Wilson. Throughout the early 2000s, the three-rail side of the model railroad hobby went through some dramatic changes. By the time I was ready to build a new layout in my first house, there were quite a few manufacturers producing 1 to 48 proportion models that could run on three-rail track. I had sold off most of my toy and semi-scale pieces by this time to concentrate on acquiring scale items. It would take a few years of this effort to settle in on a favored road, the Pennsylvania Railroad, which I grew to admire during my time in Pennsylvania. Concurrently, control systems moved from transformer analog control with electromechanical reverse to full-feature command control, complete with high-fidelity sound and closed-loop speed control. This allowed new locomotive models, which already looked better than their toy train predecessors, to run more like the heavy machines they represented. My current layout came about after my wife and I moved to a ranch-style home that featured a larger basement space than I previously had. After preparing the space for the model railroad and a generous-sized workshop, I was able to get to work after being without a layout for a couple of years. The version of Northbrook, shown here, is much like the model railroad in my previous home. It's a fairly simple, display-style layout with long passing sidings, some industrial spurs, and a locomotive servicing facility with a turntable and roundhouse. Editor's note, Norm's prior layout was featured in the November 2008 issue of Classic Toy Trains. End note. The layout design was intentionally kept simple so I can run some larger steam locomotives. The plan was inspired by many of the classic designs in Lynn Westcott's book, 101 Track Plans. Next paragraph, Scenery and Construction. The scenery represents the industrial Northeast and Midwest in the mid to late 1950s. This allows me to focus on the various structures I like while adding some eastern mountain elements. My primary prototype focus is the PRR and the late steam to diesel transition era. Trackage rights are granted to the B&O, C&O, N&W, and sometimes NYC and Pear Marquette. Modeling the PRR in the late steam era allows me to run interesting locomotives such as Santa Fe Class 5011 210-4s. These engines were leased by the Pensy in the last days of steam in Ohio. I also take a bit of license and run engines like the T1 and Q2, which didn't make it to the final days of steam. Most of the time I run I1 decapods, M1 Mountains, and some early diesels like F7s and GP7s. The benchwork is fairly simple, as the layout is without grades. It consists of half-inch plywood sheets supported by 1x4s on 16-inch centers. The main section of the layout is about 10.5 feet wide by 36 feet long, with a single duck under leading to a wide center aisle. The engine yard is 4 feet at the widest and about 18 feet long. The deck height is around 42 inches. All of the benchwork was painted flat black before the track and scenery was installed. The edges of the layout are trimmed in 1/8-inch tempered hardboard painted flat black. With the ceiling painted the same color, it keeps the focus on the layout. Scenic landforms on the layout were carved out of 2-inch thick extruded foam insulation board. I use it a bit differently than most modelers, as I don't tend to stack the sheets flat to achieve contours. For a lot of the background bluffs, where there might be as little as 3 inches between the layout and backdrop, I stood the foam vertically after ripping it to depth with a 5-inch circular saw. The pieces were then bonded with hot glue. When attaching one piece of foam to another, a slight shear motion can help set them tight during assembly. On some of the more freestanding sections, I built the basic contours using repurposed cardboard boxes cut to form the spine of the hillside. This basic skeleton was put together with hot glue. I then ripped 4-inch to 5-inch wide pieces of foam board and cut them into crude bricks, roughly 6 inches to 8 inches long. These were glued into the cardboard forms and carved. I could work very rapidly with this way to get mountain shapes roughed out. It was much easier to handle the brick-sized chunks, and I ended up with less waste. A set of rasps and a keyhole saw were used for carving and shaping. Once I was happy with the shape of the landforms, I used commercial foam rocks where needed, complemented with hand-carved plaster. To color the rocks, I applied a base coat of Krylon flat khaki, followed by black and brown washes. I dry brushed the raised surfaces with light colors. I didn't cover the raw pink foam board with anything other than flat black latex paint. I applied the paint after spackling any obvious gaps. The ground cover is Scenic Express Adirondack blend with backyard dirt and finely ground leaves. My trees are mostly Scenic Express super trees. These are spray-painted flat black in batches with the cheapest paint I can find. When ready for use, I dip them in diluted white or carpenter's glue, apply flocking, and install them on the hills. The backdrop is 1/8-inch tempered over drywall, secured with an air nailer and construction adhesive. All of the seams were taped and mudded with drywall compound. I painted the sky in layers, starting with a soft gray and layering a few shades of sky blue over it, with the darker shades higher. The clouds were hand-painted with tube acrylics. All of the corners were covered with a roughly 2-foot radius to reduce shadows. Lighting consists of 3 main parallel rows of track lights. I used about 54 5000K PAR 20 light-emitting diode, or LED, lights at a roughly 30-degree angle to illuminate the layout. A line of open-bulb 5000K LED lamps runs down the center aisle of the layout just behind the HVAC ductwork to provide a valanced fill light. The next paragraph is structures. Like my last layout, all of the background structures are scratch-built using various materials like foam core and tempered hardboard. The town buildings are a combination of scratch-built, kit-bashed, and kit-built structures. Many are by Downtown Deco. New builds are now getting full interiors with removable roofs and LED lighting. Major railroad structures like the Roundhouse and Car/Diesel Shop are Altoona Model Works kits. Both buildings have many interior details and LED lighting. The 350-ton coaling dock was scratch-built based on 2 Grand Trunk Western prototypes in Michigan. The operating turntable is a Millhouse River product with PRR details. I've taken to 3D printing in the past few years to enhance my buildings, which has been a lot of fun. I use a CAD program to make the designs, most of which are very simple. I find that adding interior details makes the buildings much more interesting. The next paragraph is track plan, track work, and control. The track plan focuses on running in loops and viewing trains much as a railfan would. I have 2 parallel loops that allow trains to run independently and several passing sidings and spurs for industry. When I'm in the mood, I may do pickups and drop-offs for local industries on the inner loop. There are 2 crossovers that allow trains to move from one main to the other. The 3-rail track is Atlas O nickel-silver on Cork roadbed. All turnouts except 1 are number 5s. They're controlled by under-table switch machines. the curves are 49.5-inch radius and 45-inch radius, which may be tight by HO standards, but is rather generous for 3-rail O. Most 3-rail steam is built to go around at least a 36-inch radius. All wiring is common ground using 16-gauge wire with feeders soldered to rail joiners every 6 feet. There are 3 135-watt powerhouse power supplies controlled by legacy power masters, providing fixed 18-volt AC track power. The track is painted and weathered with Floquil rail brown and acrylic grimy black applied with an airbrush. The ballast is mostly Woodland Scenic's fine cinders over a layer of play sand that helps fill the space between the tiles. Train and layout control is primarily Lionel Train Master Command Control, or TMCC, and Legacy. This was a groundbreaking system to me at the time, as it opened up the 3-rail hobby to the benefits of command control while using a very simple interface via the Cab 1 controller, parentheses, and then the Cab 2 for Legacy, close parentheses. The Power Masters also provide overload and overcurrent protection, along with emergency stop functionality. Command instructions are issued via a classic Base 1, which talks with the original Cab 1s, and a Base 2. Legacy and TMCC are also used for layout structure, lighting, and turnout control via SC-2s. Recently, I installed a Soundtrax Bluenami sound decoder and an MTH PRR H10 as an experiment. This allowed me to add a DCC locomotive with all of its benefits to my layout without installing any other hardware. I really like the ability to select from a library of 90 whistles to match the prototype. Currently, this isn't an available feature on 3-rail. The motor control is also exceptional and very tunable for realistic and smooth performance. At this point, I have another Bluenami decoder waiting to be installed into a 3-rail PRR M1B. I think that Bluenami has much promise for cost-effective, full-featured command control installations. My layout has fully functional PRR position light signals made by Custom Signals. These show correct indications for block occupation and routing using the Custom Signals electronics. Block occupation is triggered by insulated rails. Since the outer two rails are ground, insulating one allows it to be used as a ground trigger for the signal controls via locomotive and rolling stock axles. The next paragraph is motive power and rolling stock. My locomotives and rolling stock are set up for 3-rail scale, or 3RS. All models are 1:48 proportion and equipped with KD couplers. Everything is weathered to represent the shop-worn look of the late steam era. For locomotives and rolling stock, I tend to apply a base layer of dull coat first, followed by various washes. I use an airbrush to add the final effects. I typically use acrylics for airbrushing. While I lament the loss of Polyscale and Model Master acrylics, I've found some worthy substitutes lately, including Badger, AK Interactive, Vallejo, and Rail Center paints. My go-to colors are Grimy Black, Railroad Tie Brown, and various rust and earth tones, carefully applied so as not to overdo it. I also experiment with products like AK Weathering Pencils for streaking effects. I use dry brush techniques with tube acrylics to make details stand out. I keep myself very busy with all the activities that go into having a layout. I enjoy exploring new tech that supports my modeling efforts, like 3D printing. I've also been slowly collecting miniature machining tools to keep my engines rolling. I recently added a Sure-Line mini mill and a resistance soldering station to my workshop so I can pursue more advanced locomotive projects. To learn more about the ongoing projects at Northbrook, visit my YouTube channel at Norm S. Trains. Meet Norm Charbonneau. Norm Charbonneau is a field service engineer in the mechanical testing industry and lives in Northville, Michigan with his wife. They enjoy riding steam excursion trips around the world. Norm got a start in model railroading at the age of 5 when he received a Mark's Yardmaster set for Christmas. The next article is The Colorful Buffalo in Pittsburgh. This double deck N-scale layout is set in the late 1980s. By John Percy, photos by Dan Munson. When I first visited the Buffalo in Pittsburgh, or BPRR, yard and engine terminal in Butler, Pennsylvania in 1990, there was a colorful gathering of diesels representing seemingly every major railroad that was around during that time. The riot of color inspired me to abandon the fictional HO scale layout I was building and start assembling a collection of N-scale locomotives and freight cars that I'd need to recreate the BPRR. Along the way, I've had help from railroad employees, fellow rail fans, my construction crew, and a host of guest operators. The journey has been marked by luck, good friendships, and camaraderie. The first paragraph is prototype history. The Buffalo in Pittsburgh was the fourth railroad formed by the Genesee and Wyoming, a short line holding company that now has more than 100 railroads throughout North America in its portfolio. The BPRR, a Class II railroad, was created from the CSX, parentheses, X Baltimore and Ohio, NE Buffalo, Rochester and Pittsburgh, close parentheses, mainline subdivision between Newcastle, Pennsylvania and Buffalo, New York, as well as the northern subdivision running from Butler, Pennsylvania to Petrolia, Pennsylvania. The BPRR started operations on July 19, 1988. Though coal was the railroad's main commodity at startup, numerous chemical plants and petroleum refineries on the main line and northern subdivisions provided valuable car loadings. In addition, there was significant bridge traffic between CSX, Canadian National, and Canadian Pacific. The BPRR also interchanged coal, steel products, and scrap metal with the Bessemer and Lake Erie. The next paragraph is a little help from some friends. When I decided to model the BPRR, I knew I wanted to include Butler, Pennsylvania, my hometown, the Northern Subdivision, and as much of the main line as I could fit in some unknown future space. Modeling a prototype railroad entails lots of research and help from the experts. Over the course of the next 16 years, I gathered prototype information and pictures and visited the prototype. I had the good fortune of meeting and spending hours talking with the railroad superintendent of operations, yardmasters, and switch crews. They were very generous with their time and provided me with track charts, employee timetables, and thousands of switch and track lists. Over the years, I met virtually with Mike Zolich, BPRR engineer, historian, and author of several books on the Buffalo, Rochester, and Pittsburgh, the BPRR's predecessor. Through his books and email exchanges, I gained insight into the scenery and operations on the north end of the railroad. Along with the thousands of pictures I took, I had the necessary information to accurately model the BPRR. The next paragraph is track planning. I used a track chart book given to me by the BPRR's operations superintendent when developing the track plan for my N-scale layout. I supplemented that information with Google Earth, which I used to measure track lengths and see how sidings and industries were positioned. I used this two-prong approach to design Butler and the Northern Sub. On the main line, I kept just ahead of my track laying crew with napkin and scrap paper drawings of what I wanted. Where possible, I maintained the track configuration of the prototype industries. I enjoy industrial switching, so I sacrificed space between towns to preserve these opportunities. The next paragraph is constructing the layout. I knew that no matter what space I would eventually have, I wanted to faithfully recreate the Butler engine facility. When I lived in Virginia, I built an 8-foot-long module with the same track configuration as the prototype. When I moved to Kansas in 2007, this module formed the nucleus around which the rest of the layout was designed. To do justice to the Northern Subdivision, I built a double-deck model railroad. Most of the layout is 1-inch thick extruded foam insulation board over a framework of 1x4 lumber. I prefer working with foam because it's easy to carve, stack, and shape. However, where tracks ascend or descend, we used traditional plywood sub-road bed to more easily change elevations. The space between tracks was filled with foam. I used Atlas Code 55 track throughout the layout, as I felt it best captures the look of what's seen on railroads in the United States. The track was ballasted with real rock products. The scenery on the layout is fairly traditional: real dirt, ground foam, and static grass. Dave Akeson installed nearly 4,000 trees using Scenic Express products. Structures on the layout are almost entirely scratch-built by me, my brother Jim Percy, and Jason Stiles. To me, scratch building is the most time-consuming but satisfying aspect of layout construction. The next paragraph is modeling the motive power. For the first 6 months of operation, the BPRR relied on leased engines from CSX and locomotive leasing companies, as well as power from the Rochester and Southern and Genesee and Wyoming railroads. It also purchased used first and second generation power from Conrail, CSX, and Norfolk Southern. Most of these diesels would go on to serve the BPRR for another 25 plus years. To accurately capture the look of the early locomotive fleet, I relied heavily on photos taken by Ross Jack, a longtime BPRR railfan and historian. He took photos of the Baltimore and Ohio, CSX, and BPRR locomotives passing through Butler for years and unselfishly shared them with me. Justin Sobeck used the photos to create the bulk of the fleet, every four-axle locomotive and BPRR owned or leased in 1988 and 1989. Bill Hurt and I helped renumber some of the ex-Baltimore and Ohio and Chesapeake and Ohio Electromotive Division GP9s repainted in the orange, black, and yellow scheme of BPRR's parent, Genesee and Wyoming. Most of the engines in the fleet are from Atlas Model Railroad Company. A few of the CSX lease engines are Cotto products. Operators have often remarked on how smoothly the locomotives run. This is due largely to our maintenance program. Over the years, John Akeson has disassembled, cleaned, and lubricated every engine. In addition, we use a product called No Ox ID, an electrical contact grease, on the parts carrying electrical current from the wheels to the motor. We use the same product to treat the rails. Though it doesn't keep dust from landing on the track, it ensures oxidation isn't a barrier to good electrical contact. The next paragraph is operations on the BPRR. A full cycle of daily operations on the BPRR begins with the zigzag train, a turn job that leaves Butler after midnight, picks up interchange traffic at Newcastle, and returns to Butler. There, the Butler switcher breaks the train down and builds a Petrolia switcher train for the northern sub and a daily northbound freight for the main line. Along the main line, there are Dubois, Johnsonburg, and Bradford switchers. The Buffalo switcher works the yard at its namesake, building the daily southbound freight. The second shift switcher travels down to East Salamanca, New York, to work the industries there and switch interchange traffic with the Rochester and Southern. In addition to the two road freights, there are daily east and westbound Sealand intermodal trains and coal trains. These trains are run as extras. All of this activity keeps me and 5 two-person crews busy for about 3 hours during an operating session. I serve as dispatcher, issuing verbal track warrants to move trains along the line, and yardmaster or superintendent to represent management and answer questions. Using radios to accomplish this lends some authenticity, and more often some humor, to our op sessions. The next paragraph is switching systems. I originally ran trains with 5 GML Enterprises walk-around direct current throttles using selector switches to route power to the multiple blocks. Although this is usually unwieldy on a large layout, it worked well on my BPRR. I located the blocks so that every crew had the blocks they needed without having to worry about keeping track of how the switches were lined. When it came time to run a through train, we just had to make sure the switcher was in a different electrical block than the road freight. Usually, this was on an industry siding or a track with a shutoff switch. Eventually, the DC throttles began breaking down, and I was forced to convert to Digital Command Control, or DCC. I chose Digitrax because members of my operating crew and I were familiar with the company's products. Converting the railroad to DCC was easy. I joined the bus wires that kept the DC block separated. I enjoy the ability to make and change multiple unit assignments as desired. That and the sound-equipped diesels enhance the layout's realism. The final paragraph is future plans. Model railroading is an enjoyable hobby because there are so many facets to it. Many of the layouts shown in the hobby press aren't finished, and so it is with the N-scale Buffalo and Pittsburgh. We still have much to do, including converting engines to DCC, building hundreds of structures, and scenicking unfinished areas. It's all about enjoying the journey with the crew. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@AfterSight.org. Thank you for listening.